go. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! A minute and a half past the hour, and we begin this Friday on the front porch on the horn. It is Friday, the 14th day of August 2015. We are halfway, or almost halfway through the month. We'll be past the halfway mark by the time we get back together again for Moran Monday on the 17th day of August. Thank you very kindly, Randy, noting loud and clear on iTunes on my Mac, Bob. That is awfully good to know, and I don't say that idly. We don't have a confirmation monitor here because this isn't terrestrial radio. No, this is the wild, wild, wide open interweb tubes where we can say booger and not worry about a $475,000 fine being handed down by the censors at the Funky Communications Commission. Oh, hi, I'm Bob Kincaid, and I apologize for last night's absence and for any confusion it may have caused. I tweeted out and Facebooked early on that I had to take Agnes to Charleston because one of her good friends' husband was undergoing open-heart surgery. And apparently the message didn't get all the way through because some people, based on some tweets that I sent, thought that I might have been there myself. No, not yet. Not yet, at least. Knock wood. Yeah. So, I could not get to air last night, and apparently I made a couple of people go, "What?" And for that, for both, I apologize. They're in the hospital, and what confused some people is I sent a picture out. You can see it on my Facebook page if you wish. From a portion of the hospital where we went, and it included, it looked a little like a flow chart, and it just, English is fun when you stack it, when you try to read it vertically instead of, but anyway, it was prayer lab surgery, cardio, open heart, that's the way it flowed, and I just thought that and Agnes did too. I thought the idea of a hospital in West Virginia, supposedly its most preeminent cardiac care hospital, would have a prayer lab to be hilarious. Yeah, if you got heart troubles, first they take you to the prayer lab, and a guy with some rattles comes over, and then there's a priest with some incense and some chanting monks and a whole bunch of flummery, and then they finally figure out that doesn't work, so they take you to the cardiac lab or to open heart. Yeah, there was a show that didn't live for very long. I think it was on NBC many, many years ago, where one of the characters who had something bigoted said to him responded, "Oh, no. Our gods are quite powerful when properly invoked." Mm-hmm. So that was what that was. But anyway, I wasn't able to be here last night, and I apologize for it because there was all kinds of good stuff to talk about. Who knows? Maybe we'll double back to it anyway. And I want to thank two people. First of all, I want to thank VJ for jumping in on the fundraising efforts. And that takes us down to, I think, around $1,200. And then this evening, we have, of course, the usual $200 we try to raise on any given evening for the program. That's just to keep things going. And then, of course, the ongoing equipment fund. And toward that end, I received a note earlier today from John. And this is a member of the Fraternity of Johns here in the Horn Family Commune Congregation. We have many, many people named John. In other words, this is not Dr. John. This is John. But John sent me a note and said, okay, so here's the deal. Let's see if we can double two contributions this evening. Let's see if we can double $100, half a program, for the program itself, and let's see if we can double $100 for the equipment fund, both of them as a challenge. So your 100 can become 2, your 50 becomes 1, etc. You know how the challenges work here. And the same thing applies to the equipment fund. We are getting very close, and I'm getting very excited. Hopefully, who knows, maybe before August is even out, we'll have the equipment in hand and be able to start making steps toward being able to do that fill-in guest hosting thing about which I'm so excited and so very looking forward. So there's a challenge on the table, $100 for fundraising for the evening, which will bring us flush with the end of this week and the middle of August. Well, not the middle of August, no, but through the first 2 weeks of August. And a $100 challenge for the equipment fund. And thank you very kindly to John on both accounts. So that would take us down to $1,000 on the equipment fund, which would be, in point of fact, a freaking amazing. Yeah. All right. So here we go. Friday on the front porch, on the horn. And I thought, this goes back to the very, very end of the conversation that I had with our good friend, the Angry Indian, on Wednesday evening. And I don't want you to think that I think that I'm a prophet or anything, or that, you know, I walk around wearing a threadbare velvet wizard's robe with frayed appliqued moons and stars and glow-in-the-dark language on it that says, "Will thee kiss me in the dark, baby," while I look at my magic eight ball, which is perennially cracked and always says, "Answer hazy, ask again later." No. But with the announcement on Wednesday that former President Jimmy Carter, by far and away the most decent man to occupy the White House, how far back do you have to go for that level of decency? I mean, past Nixon, arguably past Kennedy and past Eisenhower. Truman was pretty decent, so was FDR. Hoover? Coolidge? Harding? Wilson? Taft? Certainly the most decent living former president that we have. The announcement came out that he has cancer in several parts of his body. And in wrapping up the conversation with our buddy, the Angry Indian, I said, "Just you watch." Because this didn't take a particularly high degree of prognostication or anything. It just, Republicans are what Republicans are. It's like the old story about the frog ferrying the scorpion across the stream, and the frog says, "Now if you sting me, we're both going to die." Scorpion says, "Oh, I know. I won't do that. I got to get to the other side." Halfway across the creek, the scorpion stings the frog. The frog says, "Hey, I told you, we're both going to die now." And the scorpion says, "Yeah, but you knew what I was when you let me get on your back." And it's that way with Republicans. They're predictable. And so it is, and I remember this woman, this hateful woman's name. She's apparently trying to climb into the upper reaches of right-wing hate. And so she's trying to get a hashtag rolling along. I saw this courtesy of our good friend Carol Baker on her Facebook page. Debbie Schlussel, right-wing pile of excrement, and I don't have any problem referring to her as such because she rather broadcasts it to the entire known universe with her own words. She tweeted, "Only the good die young. Jimmy Carter, 90, has cancer. So sad, too bad. Hashtag TCOT." TCOT is where the weirdo right-wing conservatives gather. Hashtag GOP, hashtag, and this is what she's trying to get rolling, a cancer has cancer, hashtag Jimmy. Yeah, stay classy, Debbie Schlussel. I think one of those million-unit injections of penicillin will quite often cure a bad case of Schlussel. But there is. Of course, she failed to take into account the age at death of Ronnie Reagan, and the fact that George H.W. Bush is up there, too. Yeah. Nobody said right-wingers are particularly intelligent, right? Yeah. But this is just, and I actually, before I decided to even mention this, I had to stop and think about things that we've said about Republicans that we don't want, like, or want. And that includes the word Republicans. That's not celebrating anybody's demise. I think about the 8 long, miserable, sordid, blood-sodden years of the reign of error of Dim Leader. And so there we are again. Reign of error. Dim Leader. Nope, nothing in there. Wishing for his imminent demise. Sorry. And, of course, we have to recognize, or at least some of us do, that wishing or... This isn't even wishing. She's just being crummy. Just being an example of a very, very, very poor human being. I mean, on our side, we called for things like for Dick Cheney and Condoleezza Rice and Donald Rumsfeld and Paul Wolfowitz and, yes, Dim Leader, to be tried for the war crimes that they committed in an international tribunal at The Hague. It's part of, and oddly enough, a significant hunk of the world agrees with us, and that's why Richard B., big-time Dick Cheney, before he dicks you, and that decent human being's heart that continues to beat in his chest, that's why he can't really leave the United States of America, because there's a lot of people that would like to try him for war crimes, for starting the war against the people of Iraq. Yeah. And the only thing I could come up with was the facetious little remark The countdown calendar, or count-up calendar, I suppose, that used to appear at a delightful little website called WD40.com. Long since gone. That said, it's been X days since Dick Cheney's last heart attack. Please send butter. But even that was understood to be satirical. This is just sickening. I don't recall anybody rejoicing when Dick Cheney had health problems. But on the Republican side, they do. Now, I don't have access to the actual tweet, but I'd be curious to how many likes it has. Sort of along the lines of all those good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered Republicans in that arena in Cleveland who just clapped, and they clapped, and they laughed when not a good journalist, Megyn Kelly, last week talked about how Donald Trump had referred to women as pigs and dogs and slobs. And the Republicans just, oh, they clapped and they laughed. To use the previous word, in fact, they rejoiced. And there was much rejoicing. Yay. Oh, no, it wasn't just a yay. It was clapping and a laughing and a giggling and a snorting. Marv Alane, you're snorting again. It's all right when we're sitting there watching the Fox News TV Radio Rwanda and they're making fun of Jimmy Carter having cancer, but it's not so good in public. And they just laughed and they laughed. Yeah. So that's part of it. Yeah. And then, of course, having mentioned them, we may as well wrap up or deal with it. Over there on Fox News TV, Radio Rwanda, yeah. What do you get? Well, you get Charles Hurt. Or you get Fox News, the official Fox News Twitter account. Our country has not been as aimless and lost as it is today. Since, I think, Jimmy Carter, it's probably even worse today. Yeah. By the way, Debbie Schlussel also said, a cancer has cancer. Oops, I mean Jimmy Carter has cancer. Same diff. You see, out there in right-wing world, out there in fascist land, people like Debbie Schlussel and the folks who run the Fox News TV Radio Rwanda Twitter account know that there is at the very least a substantial plurality and quite possibly a majority of GOP members who not only accept but approve of evil garbage like this. By the way, Debbie Schlussel got retweeted 18 times and favorited 6. Is that hopeful? Maybe. But that's not all. Kind of a trifecta, really. From the Republicans laughing and clapping about Donald Trump calling women pigs and dogs and slobs, to Debbie Schlussel and that other tweet. To Chicago. Yeah. Where the Chicago Tribune apparently employs an op-ed writer by the name of Kristen McQuarrie. Maybe she pronounces it McQuarrie. I don't know. But, you know, the 10th anniversary of the heartrending disaster that was New Orleans, Louisiana, when Hurricane Katrina struck, is coming up at the end of this month. And I suppose there will be some looking back done, some retrospectives done, some people are already getting started. The New York Times put out an article, and NPR did a story on the fact that there are more restaurants in New Orleans now than there were before Hurricane Katrina. The New York Times published a photo of some shrimp in a red sauce and some green things, maybe some okra or zucchini or something, in a little skillet sitting at a table, and there's a fork and napkins and white linen. And the New York Times tweeted, "Decade after Katrina, New Orleans is a better place to eat than it was before the storm." Because, you know, that's what we think about in terms of New Orleans. Never mind all the dead, never mind the depopulation, never mind the dispersal, never mind the gentrification. White America wants to know if it's a good place to eat, or is it better than it was before? Marveline, is that little Ewok-looking feller, that emerald, is he still down there? I was thinking we might take a vacation this year. After hurricane season, of course. Mm-hmm. That ain't even the worst of it. No, like I said, Chicago. And the Chicago Tribune, which is of course, a miserable right-wing rag. But how many instances are there of membership in the for-profit media in the middle of the second decade of the 21st century are there that aren't right-wing rags or mouthpieces or Radio Rwandas? But this just seems particularly nasty. Kristen McQuarrie wrote yesterday, "Envy isn't a rational response to the upcoming 10-year anniversary of Hurricane Katrina." Really, that's your hook? Okay. "But with August 29th fast approaching, and does one wear white on August 29th? For the 10th anniversary of Katrina? I don't know. "But with August 29th fast approaching, and New Orleans Mayor Mitch Landrieu making media rounds, including at the Tribune editorial board, I find myself wishing for a storm in Chicago." I kind of halfway hope our buddy Will isn't listening just now. Yeah, yeah. Kristen McQuarrie needs a devastating, life-massacring storm in Chicago because she doesn't like the politics there. I find myself wishing for a storm in Chicago. An unpredictable, haughty, devastating swirl of fury. A dramatic levee break. Geysers bursting through manhole covers. A sleeping city forced onto the rooftops. Remember, this is what she's wishing on her home city, Chicago. Yeah, she wants Chicagoans on the rooftops. Of course, she doesn't mention the New Orleanians floating face down, bloated in the hot August sun, in the toxic, fetid floodwaters after the levees broke. She doesn't mention the 1,500 people who were alive before Katrina who weren't afterward. She doesn't mention the dispersal, the diaspora of people who still are outside New Orleans and still yearn for home and still cannot return. Yeah, no right of return for New Orleanians, at least not if you're that color. Yeah. Man. Stay classy, Kristen McQuarrie.
That's what it took to hit the reset button in New Orleans. Chaos, tragedy, heartbreak.
Heartbreak. Huh, funny. We get chaos, tragedy, and heartbreak. Interesting that she didn't type. Let's see. That's the shift D. That, do I have the big D? Okay, yeah. E-A-T-H, period.
Now, let's not leave the death. I mean, after all, they were, you know, only poor people. Residents overthrew a corrupt government. A new mayor slashed the city budget, forced unpaid furloughs, cut positions, detonated labor contracts. New Orleans City Hall got leaner and more efficient. Dilapidated buildings were torn down. Public housing got rebuilt. Governments were consolidated.
Yeah, because the educational system in New Orleans is just great now. See, it's just, I mean, 1,558 dead, is that the official number? And God only knows how many people permanently displaced. Some of them, you may recall, wound up in the Astrodome, where Babs Bush of the Beautiful Mind said,
"Well, I'm just worried that they're going to like it here in Houston so much that they'll stay." Yeah. An underperforming public school saw a complete makeover. A new school's chief, Paul Vallis, designed a school system with the flexibility of an entrepreneur.
You know the problem with the French? They don't have a word for entrepreneur.
No restrictive mandates from the city or the state.
Of Louisiana? Really? Restrictive mandates? They have those down there? In that Republican, free market, libertarian, anarcho-capitalist paradise? Restrictive? Oh, dear.
No demands from teacher unions to abide. Instead, he created the nation's first free market education system. Hurricane Katrina gave the great American city a rebirth. And a whole lot of death. And a whole lot of misery. And a whole lot of stuff that still hasn't been fixed and still isn't okay. But the city is much, much whiter now, isn't it? You know what occurs to me? If only the South had still had slavery when Katrina hit, the white folks might have cared a little bit more about the black folks. You know, because they would have been property. Because that's all that these people care about, is property. This is the crowd that if they could build the time machine, have Sherman set the Wayback Machine for, oh, say, June 1776, they'd lean on Thomas Jefferson and say, no, 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 forget about that pursuit of happiness. Put that Lockean stuff back in there about pursuit of property. Oh, yeah. Nice lady, Kristen McQuarrie. This weekend is the Chicago Air and Water Show. Thousands of people will stream to Chicago's lakefront to marvel at the city and its offerings. All five senses satiated. Visitors will clamp their palms on their ears to tame the vibration. They will gasp at the stunning skyline. They will taste the sand-swept breeze. They will feel the sun's touch. They will smell the engine fuel. They will delight. Chicago is so good at hiding its rot. And this is where she shifts gears over into financial chaos, brugga-brugga, conservative policies, trickle-down, free market, libertarian, forever bilge. Because, see, Chicago would be ever so much better off if it could be in the tender mercies of some free market anarcho-capitalist Ayn Rand book-licking Republican who could tell those poors where to shove it. Of course, interestingly enough, one of those right-wing Republicans wouldn't do a damn thing about the ongoing gun violence problem that Chicago has. She babbles on for a while, Kristen McQuarrie does, and then she says, so if you think somehow new leadership is going to right the ship, you might want to get your head checked. There's no sense of urgency about the cities or the schools' perpetual abyss. Not under Emmanuel. Not with a new city council. Not with a new board at CPS. Poor thing, so unhappy. That's why, this is her writing, not me, no kidding. With the 10th anniversary of Katrina coming up, she typed, that's why I find myself praying for a storm. Okay, a figurative storm. Something that'll prompt a rebirth in Chicago. I can relate metaphorically to the residents of New Orleans climbing onto their rooftops and begging for help and waving their arms and lurching toward rescue helicopters. Except here, no one responds to the SOS messages painted boldly in the sky.
To hear her tell it, you'd think that it was some witch on a broom writing Surrender McQuarrie.
Instead, they doubled down on their own man-made disaster.
Interestingly enough, just ask a progressive in Chicago. They'll tell you Rahm Emanuel ain't much in the way of a Democrat. Yeah. We were a young little program 10 years ago. We made some of our oldest and dearest friends during the aftermath of Katrina. Kate, who was in Arizona at the time and is presently on the front range in Montana, jumped in her pickup truck and got going and went to the Gulf Coast to do whatever needed to be done to provide something resembling relief to the suffering thousands, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands along the Gulf Coast. There were calls to this program from people desperate to give real-time, real-world, on-the-ground accounts that things were not going well at all. There were calls about the toxic fumes in the FEMA trailers. People getting sick off of them. And there was death. Oh God, there was death. And for those who survived, a distant horizon that everything in front of it was just misery. But because she can't see past her own privilege, Kristen McQuarrie wants some sort of apocalyptic something to happen to Chicago. I don't know. Maybe a Balrog could come out of Lake Michigan and just gobble up, what is it, Lakeshore Drive?
Well, no, no, no. The people who caused the problems in Chicago aren't on Lakeshore Drive. You know, it's those people. The trade unionists and the liberals and the progressives and the poors and the wrong colorids.
She wants an unpredictable, haughty, devastating swirl of fury to blow away, wash away all the nasty liberals and Democrats.
And teachers. The damn union teachers. The nerve of them wanting to be paid a living wage for teaching children.
She wants a Chicago where there are no demands from teacher unions to abide.
Maybe if Maybe if a teacher says that she wants to be a member of a union, Kristen McQuarrie could have her taken out and shot. The hell is wrong with these people? What's sideways in their damn brains? What happened to them when they were children that kept them from developing ordinary, normal, decent human compassion? Whether it's Debbie Schlussel or Kristen McQuarrie, is it because they didn't get a pony at Christmas or Hanukkah? What? And while we're at it, let's ask the next question. Because anything that goes into a newspaper, unless the business has completely changed, has to at least be passed by an editor. So it's not just that Kristen McQuarrie wrote this slop. It's that an editor above her said, run it! Oh, wait, ninth paragraph there, Kristen. It's I before E, except after C, or when you're a Republican. I'm stymied. And again, this isn't an isolated incident. It's not like there's just this one conservative in Chicago who happens to apparently have masturbation fantasies about death-dealing storms and failures of infrastructure. Because, see, that line there, after a careful study of the levees, it turns out the devastation was not born of natural disaster. It was man-made.
Why was it man-made?
Yeah, sure, the Army Corps of Engineers had blame placed squarely upon it. It was not, however, liable for any damages, though, because of sovereign immunity under what? The 1920... I'm such a fan of the old In-Laws movie, 1978. The Guacamole Act of 1918. No. It's like the Hurricane Storms Levy Act of 1928 or something. So the Army Corps of Engineers negligently designed and negligently maintained the levee system in New Orleans, and it got 1,500 people killed, but you can't sue them because they're sovereignly immune. But if I recall the reading that I did about Hurricane Katrina in its aftermath and about the levee systems, it's not like the Army Corps of Engineers didn't say they would need more money. It's not like the Army Corps of Engineers didn't say they'd like to build a bigger levee. So while the Army Corps of Engineers is at fault, much as the EPA is at fault, as we discussed earlier this week, in regard to the Animas River toxic waste spill of 3 million gallons, 3 million gallons, Jesus Christ. I mean, I'm not laughing, but really? We've got 100 different toxic waste dams in West Virginia, and every one of them has more than 3 million gallons in it. God Almighty!
The biggest one, Brushy Fork, has 9 billion gallons in it. 3 million gallons. But just as we discussed, yes, it's the EPA's fault in Colorado. Yes, it was the Army Corps' fault in Louisiana. There's fault worth finding further back. Because somewhere back there, in the case of the levees in New Orleans, they were saying, yeah, you know, we're going to need this much money to do this job. And somewhere, some Republican or a godforsaken gaggle of them said,
but what about the money? Oh, the money, the poor, precious, innocent, threatened money. Oh, we need a tax cut. Oh, we need lower taxes. We don't need levies to protect people. I mean, most of them are, you know, those people. We need fiscal responsibility in America.
Because there always is. So, yeah, the devastation wasn't born of natural disaster. It was man-made, and the men and women who made it had R's after their godforsaken names. Because we need a small government. Because we need a limited government. Just like the Constitution says right there after the Pledge of Allegiance. There's nowhere in this country that you're safe from them. And I say that because it's only getting hotter out there, politically speaking, and only getting weirder, and you're going to start seeing the amazing effects of exponential mathematics on weirdness, because it's going to square, and then it's going to cube. And it's just going to go up and up and up. And by November of 2016, when people are heading to the polls, late October, as the election draws near, that's all we're going to hear. He or she, no matter who the Democratic nominee is
a big tax and spend liberal.
And, of course, for the most part, Democrats being Democrats, they won't push back and say, yeah, I'm a tax and spend liberal. I want to tax you rich bastards, and I want to spend it on stuff like levees and highways and bridges that won't collapse with mommies on the way to work on them. And they won't ask the question that none of these right-wingers are ever compelled to answer, to wit, how small? You want a small government. How goddamn small do you want it to be? Small enough that it can't support a military? Oh, no, not that small. Small enough that it can't support Medicaid? Now you're talking! Small enough that it can't afford Medicare? You know it! Small enough that it can't afford Social Security? Communism! You better believe it! We gotta get rid of it or we won't be free! And this isn't, it's not a recent phenomenon. Remember, it was 4 years ago when Ron Paul asked the assembled faithful in some pageant auditorium, what do you want to do? Let the uninsured just die in hospital hallways? And the Republicans just laughed and laughed and they clapped and yeah, let them die.
right? Sure. And this is the America they want, unless it happens to them.
Because as Yeshua, the brown-skinned Palestinian day laborer, noted, many will cry, Lord, Lord. And man, don't they? All those Republicans, those Republican voters cry when Orange County, California goes ablaze. Oh, they cry when their neighborhood in, say, New Jersey gets wiped out by a hurricane. Oh, those Republicans cry in Oklahoma when the finger of God reaches down and swirls the air and makes tornadoes to land on them. But there's always a Jim Inhofe out there. Republican, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, oil company-funded. Who'll be there to say, well, we can't save those Americans unless we cut the budget, because we need a small, limited government, and we're living beyond our means, even though we get to print our own money. By the way, note coming in from Jay Cruzen. I keep hearing this story, and it seems everyone leaves out the fact that the numbnuts that caused the spill worked for a private company contracted by the EPA. Why are we blaming the EPA? Well, you may hear everybody saying that. You didn't hear me saying that, Jay Cruzen, because I asked that very question a few nights ago. Were these actual EPA employees, or were they holy sacred private contractors from the private sector? Eh? Because I did. It's right there. Steve in New York noting, and we can't forget how they cry for federal government help. Oh, yes, they cry. They cry, Lord, Lord. And liberals, progressives, we don't bat an eyelash. We say we got to help these folks. Because they're Americans too. Because they're human beings. Yeah. Ah, true, Marty. True. I left out taxpayer-paid basketball arenas for rich donors. So very true. I did leave that out. So, it's about 6 minutes before the hour. And, as far as I'm concerned, it's time to fire up the bat signal. And get started on Friday on the front porch. That's what Fridays at the Horn are all about. The Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable, comprised of you, members of the Horn Family Commune Congregation, who bring your own expertise to the table and make for some damned fine radio, I might add. So hopefully we'll get that going. If you've never participated in the Friday on the Front Porch Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable, all you have to do is send a contact request on Skype to Sparky Dunk, SparkyDunc, Sparky Dunk, and he'll invite you to the group, and hopefully your audio will work nicely, and you'll be right there, part of the rollicking, real-time conversation that is Friday on the Front Porch. We also have the stress line available, 304-663-4676, 304-663-HORN. Named in memory of the inimitable, irrepressible Bill, Mr. Stress Miller. On my Twitter feed, I got sent a hell of a photograph the other day. I was sent a photograph, and if you look on my feed, you'll probably find it. I was sent a photograph of a much younger Bill, Mr. Stress Miller, with this, what the look on his face when he was sitting in a group of people attending a John Birch Society meeting in Cleveland. He later said, I had to go to find out what those bastards were up to. But apparently he wasn't able to maintain his poker face because, oh my. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, there we go. Back when the finger of God reached down to the dried out, dusty hellscape of Oklahoma and swirled up a few tornadoes that knocked the living bejesus out of that God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered state, Jim Inhofe demanded, damn it, immediate relief from the effects of those tornadoes. And when he was called on it about his previous claims of, well, you know, we've got to have some budget offsets, we're going to cut the budget, we're going to help, you know, those Yankees. He said, well, this is different. Because after all, Jim Inhofe is a keen and superior intellect. Not. Yeah, I think that kind of thing, stuff all the time. Steve in New York says, man, would I love to hear Bill's wisdom on Donald Trump and the things going on right now. Me too, Steve, and I suspect a whole lot of us as well. So let's take a little break and fire up the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable. And just see what's on everybody's mind as we bring this week to a close. This is listener-supported conversation radio. This is the horn. And it's a long long-distance dedication for Kristen McQuarrie from the horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
When this old world starts a-getting me down, and people are just too much for me to face, I'll climb way up to the top of the stairs, and all my cares just drift right into space. On the roof, it's peaceful as can be. And there the world below don't bother me. No, no. So when I come home feeling tired and beat, I'll go up where the air is fresh and sweet. I'll get far away from the hustle and crowd and all that rat race noise down in the street. On the roof, that's the only place I know. Look at the city, baby, where you just have to wish to make it so. Let's go up on the roof. they put on a show for free. And darling, you can't share it all with me. That's what I said. Keep on telling you that right smack dab in the middle of town, I found a paradise that's trouble-proof. And if this old world starts a getting you down, there's room enough for two up on a roof. Up on a roof. Up on a roof. Oh, now. Everything is all right. Everything is all right. Come on.
Past the hour, and see, that's the difference between, you know, a liberal progressive type like me and, say, Kristen McQuarrie. I'm not going to wish her a sweltering, hellish week, roasting away, perhaps dehydrating and dying, waiting for rescue on a roof because some disaster has befallen Chicago. Jesus. Yeah, you know, it just occurred to me. You know why that woman had to use, "I wish a Katrina storm would hit Chicago"? Because she would get her right-wing ass fired if she would say what the natural, what fantasy would be. Why can't my city burn down? 'Cause it's been done! Yeah, see, referencing to burning the city down and starting over from the ashes, rising like a phoenix. I mean, there's all kinds of available metaphoric stuff you can do there. No, sorry. 'Cause that'd get her canned. But if she says that she wished to... figurative hurricane would strike Chicago. Well, that's all the way down the Mississippi River, and that's okay. Because it's, of course, those people. Hey, let's check in with the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable. As always, capably moderated by the one, the only, inveterate, indefatigable veteran, Horn Malloy Skype group moderator Sparky. Good evening, Sparky.
How you doing, Bob?
I'm good. I got the new headset. Oh, it sounds great.
And I just discovered something on Windows 10. The headset has a volume control on it, and when I use it, it's got a little bar that pops up over Skype, and it goes up and down when I set the volume on the speakers.
That's nice. And is this the same Plantronics? What is it, 985?
Yeah, same exact model.
It's the 985, though, isn't it?
995.
995. Okay.
You know, the other one, I just wore the microphone out, flipping it up and down.
I think we should probably get endorsement money from Plantronics for this, because It is pretty much the official headset of the horn, is it not?
Well, that's what I've heard.
I mean, we got Dr. Bill using it. You use it. A whole bunch of folks use it.
Larry has one.
Yeah,
I know. Lottie was the one that turned me on to it.
So what's the before we go any further, what's the fire situation out there?
I haven't checked lately because there's no smoke. There's no fire smoke here, right here, but I haven't checked the fire Clear Lake. I know there's a fire going east of town here because it's go to town. We have these Caltrans message boards.
Yeah.
That flash, and it says, tune your radio to 1610. Well, the highway that goes out of my town that goes over to the coast, a real windy highway, is closed something like 21 miles out of town because of a wildfire. I haven't checked to see how big it is. I mean, I don't even think about it when the sky's blue. I know I haven't seen my neighbor in a long time. He's a supervisor with Cal Fire.
Oh, yeah. So are you buying into this Godzilla El Nino business that they've announced?
I don't know. My wife come in all freaked out. I think it was last night. She said, "Oh, we're going to have to put everything up. You're going to have to raise everything up in the shop, raise everything up in the rock shop, and we'll have to start planning what we'll do with the furniture." How do you know it's going to flood? Didn't flood here in the El Nino in 97. So let's just take it one day at a time.
Yeah, I mean, it's not quite time. Yeah.
But once it starts, it's like 97, it'll be rain day after day.
Because I'm ignorant of this sort of... When does it start?
About the end of October.
Yeah, I was going to say. So you've got to be a little ways into autumn. So you got a couple of months to wait and see, right?
Right.
I heard it's like early to mid winter when it really starts coming down.
I hear there's going to be hurricane warnings out for Los Angeles predicted for late December.
Hey, what's with the little black balls in the reservoir?
Oh, that's to reflect the sunlight because LA is trying to prevent evaporation. And because sunlight causes bacteria in the water, unlike our drinking water.
And it'll also prevent dust accumulation and sedimentation into the reservoirs, which is a pain in the ass for the pumps and that kind of thing?
I think, but from what I heard, it's just to reflect the sunlight and to prevent bacteria from growing.
I saw that story first on Chris Hayes the other night, and I thought, what the... But no, it seemed pretty cool, really.
Yeah. There's five levels of drought. One being normal, five being extreme. Because we put in reservoirs, I guess it was since 2008, we were building reservoirs. Actually, even before that, we built a boatload of reservoirs, and when this drought happened, we still had enough water in the city of LA so that this drought... I think we're at level 2 right now, which isn't bad. I mean, we have enough water for about a year before we start panicking. But
well, that's something that Marty just observed, Tim. He said, "Face it, we here in California need near biblical amounts of rain this year."
Yeah. So when it starts, if the El Nino kicks in, we'll be LA City. Well, LA City proper wouldn't really have to worry because we had a backup plan long before the drought happened. And our water and power is run by the city. You know, it's publicly owned, you know, socialism.
Yeah, I'm being told in the chat room that there are firefighters from all 50 states, comprising about 20,000 firefighters in California right now.
Yep.
Well, if you're not in California, don't light a match.
They always come from all over the place.
Yeah. And, I mean, but...
I forget what they call it. But I've seen...
Compassion? Americanism? I mean, you'd kind of like to call it that.
No, it's a state-to-state agreement.
Interstate compact?
Yeah.
Interstate compact.
Because when we had the big fires in 2008 up here, that we had... Colorado Air National Guard saw trucks all over the place from Colorado.
Reckon a small limited government could do that? I don't think it could.
And we even got a visit from George Bush after that fire.
Well, you know, it's like Malloy says, if it ain't lice, it's bedbugs.
And we even had the big old Martin Mars scooping plane in Lake Shasta from Canada. That was fun to see.
Yeah, I hear that California is basically, we're like a year short with our rain in terms of the reservoirs. It would basically take, our reservoirs are like, it would take like a year. They're basically short by a year's worth of rain statewide since 2008. So, we're pretty lucky that it hasn't been worse, this, you know, given this crazy drought we've had. It will take a lot of rain to refill those wet reservoirs. I mean, it has happened before, but I think long-term we're probably looking at, you know, a lot more drought than we are extra rainfall, you know?
Well, everybody's got their fingers crossed.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
And the homes in Pacific, was it Palisades or Palos Verdes, are worried that if this El Nino comes in, the houses are going to fall into the ocean. Again.
These are the folks who built their houses on the sides of hills that were prone to mudslides in the first place?
On top of the bluff, yeah, kind of. Well, it's, how do you describe
It's on top of a bluff. I mean, it's not like the Hollywood Hills, the homes are even more precariously perched there. Yeah. They're perched on stilts, basically. You know, overlooking, you know, they're actually over the edge of the bluff a lot of times. I would say they're like in, Palos Verdes, it's definitely on top of the bluffs. And, the natural progression of things is that mountains erode and go into the sea, you know, like Jimi Hendrix says, castles full of sand melt into the sea eventually. So, you know, when you live that close to the ocean, you have to take a certain amount of risk, I think, you know?
Especially, what's that place called again?
Would that be Assumption of the Risk, Rick?
Yes, I guess it would be Assumption of the Risk, yeah. Yeah.
And yeah. It's $3 million to $5 million a home.
Yeah.
$5 million bucks. Or in this Portuguese Bend, that place is falling down. Near Palos Verdes is the Palos Verdes estate. And I think Donald Trump bought some land there for golf. He abandoned it because Portuguese Bend kept going into the ocean.
Well, that's what happened to Trump's golf course. He sure has a lot of bad luck with his business ventures, you know. He's like one of the few guys whose casino has had to file bankruptcy, you know. With management like that, what if he was running the government, the U.S. government, you know?
Let's just print more money.
Yeah. But it is very entertaining to watch how the T-Rump supporters are really standing by him, and they're driving the Republican establishment nuts, you know. Cause,
well, look, I'm not going to sit here and say that Trump might not wind up being the Republican nominee.
Oh, I know. The guy's self-funded, and he tells it like he is. He basically, you know, called his fellow politicians during the debate prostitutes for taking money all the time. You know, and that does, you know, that has a certain amount of appeal, the fact that he's not going to have to do that, you know? I mean, but the problem is, the problem is money, and the fact there are no longer any real restrictions on money in political campaigns. And that's really the root of the problem. And a guy like Trump's not going to solve that. He's just going to try to buy his way into the office, if he's serious enough, you know? And that'll depend on whether he's got a ground organization in Iowa and New Hampshire. I mean, he can be leading the polls, but if you don't have the boots on the ground and don't have the, you know, people getting out the vote and, you know, getting the Iowa voters to the caucuses, you know, on a possibly cold night in January, you know, you can't really do that much. You got to have your friendlies attend the caucus. It's an investment of about, you know, 3 to 4 hours of time. I went to one. Actually, I went to a couple. I went to Republican caucus in 1980, and to the Democratic caucus in '84 when I saw the light and had changed. But yeah, it takes a serious investment of time. It's not like going to the primary, you know, to vote in a primary, which, you know, might not take that long. You actually have to sit there and listen to people argue, you know, the pros of their candidate, and you argue the pros of your candidate. And, I mean, it's, you know, it's old-fashioned, rough-and-tumble politics. It's actually kind of fun.
I've often thought, Rick, that I would love to live in a caucus state long enough just to participate in it. I think it'd be a hoot because I love politics.
Yeah, it is. I went with my dad. I wasn't even eligible to vote yet because I hadn't yet turned. I turned 18 the October before the election in 1980, but I did get to go to the caucus because I was going to be eligible voting age by the time the election rolled around. And my dad and I were both going for Howard Baker, and of course Reagan won the Iowa caucus that year because he was much more well organized. I mean, it was evident at the caucus site that, you know, that he had a lot of people who, you know, supported him. So he, you know, you got to really grease the skids, and, you know, unless T-Rump is willing to do that, you know, he's not going to do so well in a caucus state. He could win New Hampshire, you know, without having a whole lot of ground organization possibly, but a caucus state, forget about it, you know.
Yeah, well, it's got to be engaging, but I think he might very well, he might not necessarily even have to sink that much money into it if the Iowegians decide that they just want to screw with the system and see what happens in South Carolina and what, New Hampshire.
Yeah, New Hampshire and then South Carolina after that. Yeah, I mean, the Iowegians, especially on the Republican side, have proven to be a rather fickle bunch in terms of who they go for in the Republican primaries. Pat Robertson won Iowa in, I think, 1988, if I'm not mistaken, for the Iowa caucus. So, you know, and then Huckstery was the winner in the last election cycle. The Bushes have never done very well there, and I know that Jeburs is like it. I think he's at like 5% in the polls, which is really piss poor.
Oh God! If Jebbia was not Jebbia, I would have almost felt sorry for the man. He spoke. He stood up and he looked like a barker in a sideshow in front of a banner from the Des Moines Register to talk to the Iowegians at the fair today.
Oh yeah, that's
and
a lot
heckler
of fun.
In the back of the crowd ate his freaking lunch. I mean, did everything but walk up with his butt cheeks in his hands and hand them to Jebya and say, "Is this yours?" He started talking about how how Obama gave us the ISIS, and the guy in the back said, "No, dummy, that was your brother." And so he kept falling back, and poor little Jebya's fallback position was, well, okay, my brother done it, but we expected the deal to be renegotiated, see, so it's Obama's fault, damn it. Well, you know what? Obama did try to renegotiate the agreement, and the Iraqis said, no, after all the time you guys have been here, quit helping, goodbye, leave, screw you.
Well, with friends like that, who needs enemies? I mean, we didn't exactly do good for their country, did we, Bob?
Well, there are those million statistical excess deaths that had been recorded by Halloween 2004. Yeah, there's that.
And then the depleted uranium fields that are going to poison them for generations to come.
Yeah. What's not to
That's
love?
That's great. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, right. We're hi, I'm from America. I'm here to help.
Yeah, I think it's time we update that old saw from Ronnie Reagan. The scariest words in the English language are, "I'm from America and I'm here to help."
There you go. I think you're right. Absolutely. Was the coverage of Jebya at the fair, was that on CNN, or where'd you hear that? I haven't seen that yet.
I saw it on a clip on MSNBC today.
Oh, okay.
He's just standing there in front of a Des Moines Register banner on a riser, and I do a better job as a carnival barker on Mondays than he does. And God, it was pathetic.
Well,
I mean, because it's a fair, and it's not like this is an auditorium or anything, and you can't, and it would be rude, and they'd take you away, and don't tase me, bro, and beat the shit out of him instead. It's not like that.
Yeah, you have no control.
You have as well, candidate. I mean, that's the whole purpose of Iowa, isn't it? I mean, and New Hampshire, you got to get down in there and meet people.
The retail politics, they call it. Yeah, exactly.
And you gotta answer questions.
Yeah, yeah. And sit at people's kitchen tables or go into diners and sit down at the diner and talk to folks, you know?
And the thing is with that one remark, come on, it was your brother that made that agreement. Because that was that was the first thing he said, you know. He tried to blame the agreement on Obama. I guess he was IQ testing the audience or something. And the guy hollers, "Yeah, that was your brother that made that agreement." and in a way, I can almost, you know, because there's that whole sibling rivalry nastiness, you know, where they get into fisticuffs, and I think George punched Babs in the face one time over a game of croquet in that weird, malodorous, dysfunctional family up in Kennebunkport. I can almost see Dim Leader sitting at home watching that clip in that little cul-de-sac in Dallas going, "Yeah, I did negotiate it." Suck it.
There you go. That's
Suck
right.
it, Jeb. Suck it. I was president. Yeah. You're not going to be president.
Oh, jeez. No, I don't think Jebya is, I don't know if he's even going to be the nominee. It doesn't look good right now for him, you know? He's got that $100 million war chest, but it doesn't seem to be helping him so much.
Well, have you seen that weird little picture of an Iraqi war vet proposing to his girlfriend in front of W and the old man, must have been in Kennebunkport, as witnesses?
No.
That come out the other day.
Here's hoping the Iraq war vet had all of his appendages. You know, usually when the Bushes hang out with one of their war veterans, they like for him to not be fully complimented with all of their digits or limbs.
Well, you could only, in the picture, you could only see his torso, basically.
Well, I think the reason for that, Bob, is that they don't want the vets to throw their shoes at them, you know?
Oh, that's what, yeah. Oh, God, I'll burn it for that.
I mean, I laughed my ass off that day that I read that Iraqi reporter threw the shoe at W, and W had to duck.
Well, and then there was that lovely little backhanded reference in one of the Austin Powers movies, where Austin Powers looks at the Asian assassin comes into the room and chucks a shoe at him and cronks him on the head. And Austin Powers says, "That really hurt! Honestly, who throws a shoe?"
I think you're right. That's right. That's right. That was funny. That was a dig at W, I think.
I'm not sure how it times out. I'm not sure if that was before or after, you know, because in the original Bond films, you had a guy who threw a hat.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. That was an Asian guy. He had a metal hat or something. I don't know what it was. Forgot the guy's nickname. It was very catchy.
And then the Clampets picked it up on Beverly Hillbillies, and didn't Jethro have a cast iron hat or something that kept knocking him unconscious?
So. Yeah, I think so. Oh, speaking of Jethro, are you doing any Gazintian and whatever that is? And
hadn't had to do any ciphering or Gazintas this evening. I am proud to announce that after John's challenge that began the program, I had a note from our buddy Tom out in the Bay Area who said he was meeting both of those challenges, the one for fundraising and the one for the equipment fund. So we are drawing ever nearer. And hey,
you got to be 2/3 of the way to the equipment fund by now, aren't you, Bob?
We're getting very close to almost daggum done. We're around $1,100 bucks now.
Wow. Yeah. That's great. So besides substituting for Mike, are there other talk show progressives you can?
I don't know. I mean, I'll certainly make myself available.
Yeah. Sort of like looking for the unicorns these days, unfortunately, you know?
Well, I mean, other folks on Progressive Voices that have a nightly gig, right, or, you know, whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That'd be great. I mean, I think your voice definitely needs to get out there. I mean, I only heard about you through, you know, references on the Mike show to hey, Bob Kincaid needs help, you know, go to headonradio.com and whatever.
Oh, they've been tremendously helpful, and the Truth Seekers have chipped in generously, and the Horn FCC has, and with any luck at all, we'll get right down there. And you know, if we should happen to, by some miracle, go over a little bit, grab a new microphone or something, because there's nothing in here that hasn't been running for 10 years.
Right.
And I don't know. Maybe we'll auction off the old RE20.
You could always substitute for Brad, I guess. Brad Friedman.
I'm not sure. What time do they? What
time? I don't know. Roger said something in the chat room about that. Bradcast.
Oh, and by the way, the Bond villain was Oddjob. And his bowler hat had a steel brim. Thank you to Marty and Kelly and Ron and Roland for that odd job.
Bob, yeah. Brad is doing a show 4 or 5 days a week through KPFK at this time.
Yeah,
he's got Shano and his sidekick from the Tom Hartman show filling in on occasion, but I do think that you could do a stand-up job with Brad. If you don't know him, you should get acquainted with
I've
him.
I've known Brad for like 12 years.
Okay. At any rate, it occurs to me that the Bradcast, now that it's 4 or 5 days a week, might be an option.
Well, he's got Nicole Sandler filling in for him now. In fact, he's not in today, and she is. So, yeah. Thanks for the vote of confidence, Roger. I appreciate it. Hey, I noticed that our buddy Gary Laborman is in the room this evening. Good evening, Gary.
Maybe so. There you go.
I was muted, so hello.
Oh, no worries. I just wanted to see if you
How's
got
everybody
your.
Doing?
I wanted to see if you got your listening issues sorted out.
yeah, but I think Windows 10 sucks. Of course, I'm a very low tech kind of guy, you know, so I get confused easily.
No, that's okay. I'm a medium tech guy, and it sucks. I mean, it's Windows.
I like it.
Do you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, listen, Bob. A little bit earlier in the before you know we went to Skype, I heard you make a comment, something about EPA or contractors or whatever. Was that in reference to the spill up here at the in the Animas River?
Yeah,
it was.
Yeah.
Okay. What have you found? Because I live here in New Mexico. You know, and that's, you know, that's my territory where I used to run a lot, you know?
Yeah.
And I've been looking in the Durango, Herald, Farmington Daily Times, Albuquerque Journal. I haven't found anything that gives any type of description on detail of, you know, what occurred. It's all EPA. You know, it's all EPA,
yeah,
EPA,
and,
EPA.
And that's the way, and that's the way it's being spun, and I think for obvious reasons, Gary. But the EPA...
There was a private contractor involved.
Yeah, the EPA, this is, the, you know, this is government in the era of sequestration, right? The federal government has taken more layoffs than any other sector of the economy. So the EPA does not have a team of people who just go around treating water in toxic old abandoned mines.
Right, right. They don't. They ain't got guys that go out and muck stuff out and do remediation.
No, hell
directly.
No. No.
Being in the labors and being involved in remediation and Superfund and all this kind of stuff. I could not run across the name of the contractor.
I haven't found
whatsoever.
It myself either,
nowhere.
but I have found references to it. Jay Cruzen was the one who sent an email noting that fact, and I had mentioned that I suspected it a couple of nights before, but I haven't found the name. I haven't found the name of the contractor, but it's 99-1. I mean, I have seen reference to the contractor. But this was, I haven't seen a name of them. Those are the people who screwed up. And of course, the fun part, the fun part of that is when somebody tries to sue them, they're going to claim that they were operating under the aegis of the EPA and therefore they have sovereign immunity.
For what it's worth, I did spot the name of the contractor. I don't have it in front of me now, but it's not being hidden.
Where did you find that?
I think it was on Truthout. I'd have to hunt.
Well, maybe you can dig around while we're sitting here chatting and share that information both on the air and in the chat room in the form of a link. I mean, come on, would anybody pass out if we found out it was Halliburton?
Okay, because
or Kellogg, know, Burn, we're Loot, you know, any of those guys.
We're having our attorney general in New Mexico, and the AG up in Colorado, right now, I guess they're, and of course the Navajo Nation, the three of them are looking to file suit against the EPA. But nowhere was it mentioned, well, we're going to file suit against EPA, and we're going to file suit against, ABC Company. You know, which would always be the case.
Well, ABC would plead respondeat superior. Okay, I'm guessing. Rick, tell me if I'm getting this wrong. which is, of course, Latin for let the master respond. And then EPA would in turn say, well, that's great, you're suing us. You'll be needing to file something under the Federal Tort Claims Act. Because you can't just run and sue the government. The government's immune.
Unless they waive sovereign immunity.
Right.
You know, if there's an exception under the Federal Tort Claims Act that allows them to be sued. I know in taxes, there's a federal tax exception to the Federal Tort Claims Act.
Okay, so the outfit's name was Environmental Restoration out of Fenton, Missouri, and they hold a number of contracts with the EPA connected with mine waste management, as they put it, in Colorado. And this was in the Wall Street Journal.
Yeah, at almost the exact same time that you said that, Roger, in Minnesota, oddly enough, because the goddess of irony never takes the day off, Roger in Oregon, different Roger, said in an email, Missouri-based Environmental Restoration LLC was the contractor whose work caused a mine spill in Colorado that released an estimated 3 million gallons of toxic sludge, 3 million gallons, into a major river system, according to an Environmental Protection Agency official and government documents reviewed by the Wall Street Journal. The EPA, which was overseeing the servicing of the mine, had previously said an unnamed outside contractor was using heavy equipment when it accidentally triggered a breach in the abandoned Gold King mine, letting out wastewater that had built up inside it. Environmental Restoration LLC was working at the direction of EPA in consultation with the Colorado Division of Reclamation, Mining, and Safety, an EPA official said on Wednesday. Environmental Restoration President Dennis Greeny, in a written statement released on Thursday, said the company couldn't provide additional information about the incident, citing a confidentiality agreement it signed with EPA. It did confirm that company representatives were at the mine site at the time of the breach. The company representatives, not company D9 Caterpillar dozer operators. Representatives, team members, associates.
Well, the EPA weren't on the dozers either.
Right.
Or whatever it was. And it's starting to smell. I'm kind of thinking that they have a contract for treating the water. They have that, and there's two other mines up there that they're working on. They're trying to button them up because they leach, okay, out of the mines and down into the what the hell is the name of the creek that runs into the Animas.
Right. Okay, I mean, this is all well known to folks, you know, folks who are in mining country, whether it be hard rock mining country or Appalachia and coal mines. Like I said, we've still got abandoned mines that are running acid mine drainage into little streams and have been doing so for 125 years. And that's not to say that that it's okay, but this is one of the problems. Old mines, and it doesn't matter really what it is you're mining, old mines fill up with water. And depending on what you have been mining, the water itself will become tainted with various and sundry heavy metals, for instance. So consequently, as those things fill up, there's a problem. Now, apparently something had been done to try to remediate, because whatever it was that the guys on the dozers did, I'm suspecting they broke a wall in their sludge dam, frankly. And that's what let these 3 million gallons out. But the problem is, all those abandoned mines, because anybody who's ever had a plumbing crisis in their home knows the reality of the old adage, water will seek its own level. And that's what it was doing when it was pouring out of the Gold King mine. But the problem is, there's lots and lots and lots of toxic water seeking its own level, and in many instances, those mines have all, over the course of years, and hydrologic pressure inside them, they've become conjoined. And so the water out of one mine is the water in the next mine is the water in the next mine. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does, Bob.
And so if you try to... it's like something out of an old Warner Brothers cartoon. If you stick your finger in leak number one, leak number two is going to spring over here.
It's like whack-a-mole, but with water.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, no, it's like whack-a-mole, except with poison.
Yeah, poisoned water. Yeah.
I mean, no, I don't even think, Rick, I don't think we even use the word water in it anymore. It ain't water. It's poison.
Okay.
It's something in an aqueous suspension.
Okay. Dissolved poison. Wow.
And it's all over the place out there. I mean, Gary, isn't that whole area out there just wildly undermined?
Well, there's just, you know, hundreds of old abandoned mines. We're talking about stuff that was abandoned for, you know, 100 years plus.
Yeah. And all along the way, because see, and this is the part where you wind up picking furniture. It's not like 100 years ago they didn't know that shit was poison. Okay? They just didn't have to do anything about it. The entire history of the Industrial Revolution and industrial development in the United States is a history of industrialists dumping God only knows how much poison into rivers and streams and lakes. I mean, come on, Lake Erie, please. It's not like nobody knew it was poison. It's just that they didn't give a damn. They didn't care. If they tried to clean it up, and in most cases they didn't even try to develop the technology to do that, if they'd tried to clean it up, well, they wouldn't have been nearly the billionaire robber barons that they became.
Yeah, this mine was previously being treated. Okay, the runoff water. In other words, that natural groundwater flow that ends up inside the mine cavity and then builds up and then comes out one place or another, you know, that's the water that was being treated. Okay? I believe there was a bulkhead inside the mine, and that's what these guys opened up. Okay? I mean this shit doesn't happen by accident. Okay? That's my point.
No, it's probably somewhere between simple negligence and gross, willful, wanton, reckless conduct.
Yeah, because their contract, just like the prior mine operator, okay, was still there, even though they had, you know, this site has been, you know, long played out, whatever you want to call it. They still were treating the water, okay, in other words, the excess water, which is probably like a trickle, you know what I mean? It's probably like, you know, a very low volume, and it's being treated because it's going to go down into whatever creek it is and end up in that river.
Right.
They have been doing that for many years. Now, whatever reason, they stopped in 2006, okay? And so now this new outfit is coming in, or had been in. I'm not sure, you know, exactly what was going on there. But their part of their contract was to treat the water. And I think they got in there, and they seen that the mine is so full of water, you know what I mean? You know, and they just breached it and says, well, we'll let this excess run, you know what I mean? And then, you know, comes out...
Let me ask you, though, Gary, within that context, what does heavy equipment mean down inside the mine?
I have no idea. It could be an automatic miner if you were going to chew through some kind of blockage, you know, just like coal. You know, you got automatic miners down there, you know, chewing up the seam. Same deal, you know. Best I gather was plugged, but they haven't, you know, they just haven't given any kind of detail on, you know, exactly what the events were and how it occurred. That's what I was wondering, if they were going to do, you know, if there's going to be some sort of investigation into what happened.
Oh, I'm sure there eventually will be, and it'll be conducted by lawyers for both sides in an attempt to divert or eliminate legal liabilities.
Yeah, well, you know, of course, private contractors, you know, they certainly don't want to pay a nickel for anything. you know, that they're responsible for. That's for sure. But it's kind of sad. You know, that's such a, you know, it's, and it's not like that's a really clean, pristine river before this, and it's not like this is the first event either. You know, over you know, decades and decades. But it's just such a scenic backcountry going up through that area of Silverton. This is up on top of Red Mountain, I believe, is where these mines are located. And that's where the Animas River starts.
Get a load of this. Realty companies and certain landowners out in that area have put pressure on the EPA to not declare that particular mine site and a couple of others as Superfund sites because they're worried about the impact it will have on tourism in Durango. And there's a lengthy article connected with
that.
Well,
tourism, tourism, Roger. It'll also have an impact on property values over there at that gated community commonly known as Crippled Fawn Commons, where they're getting ready to sell houses made of where the wallboard's made of toxic coal ash waste to the rubes with the money.
Well, that's it. So there was actually pushback from local Durango business interests to prevent a proper treatment of the mine as a Superfund site.
Well, it's Silverton, too. Silverton is the town that's closest to it. Durango's about 60 miles away from Red Mountain, 60 or 70. Silverton is the high country little tourist town. Those are the two towns that the narrow gauge rail run between, from Durango to Silverton and back. So Silverton is nothing but a little tourist town. But it's an old mining town. You know, there's all sorts of, I don't know if there's any active mines up there. There might, you know, if there is, it's probably one and it's probably a smaller operation. But Silverton is a little mining town. And when you go over the mountain on the other side, you got a little town called Ouray. Okay. And Ouray is a little town that's, just, you know, amongst incredible, beautiful high mountains, you know. It's like, like being in some mountain town in Switzerland. And, so that's all tourists, you know, all those towns. And then you can go over the other mountain and head over to Telluride, but you got to go by a Jeep trail. There's no road. You gotta have a four-wheel drive vehicle or hike. You can hike from Ouray to over to Silverton. All those places are Telluride's a little ski town, and it's all tourism. So they're all, you know what I mean? That puts a stain on it, so to speak. You know, if you put the Superfund, you know, label on the property, you know, it does have an impact or certainly can have an impact on property value. That's for sure.
Oh yeah, that's like the skunk at the, you know, at the backyard barbecue. You know, nobody wants the skunk there at the barbecue. You know, who wants the Superfund designation? You know, I imagine it didn't do wonders for Rocky Flats, for example, outside of Denver, you know, when they got designated with the Superfund. But I've got kind of a simple question. Maybe you know about it, maybe you don't, but, I mean, is it even possible to clean up contaminated mines, or is it like rearranging the deck chairs on the Titanic?
Well, you have, as far as water goes, you know, you have a constant in most of these old mines, and I'm sure Bob's familiar with this too, with old played out coal mines. You know, if they came out and, you know, retreat mined them and supposedly button them up or whatever, you know, it's like you said, you know, the water's going to build up. Eventually it's going to find its way to the surface some way or means at some point. And so then that water is going to be the concentrations of the bad stuff, coming from like a really high concentration area, you know, within a mine shaft itself, you know, that's going to have much, much higher concentrations than it had the water just flowed through the mine. Okay? In other words, if it followed its natural course, even if it pooled up, you know, if it kept flowing, you know, it probably wouldn't be as bad. But what they've tried to do with some of these mines is to try to plug them up. You know, because you get polluted water coming out, and they say, well, that's not good. We don't want it going down into this stream. And that creek, that immediate creek, the one that flows into the Animas right there, you know what I mean? That's, you know, you can't even fish in that anymore. You know what I mean? Nothing goes up that stream anymore. And most of those streams in Colorado are just incredibly productive in terms of fishing, both for you know, stock trout and even native trout. So
if I could offer this into the larger consideration, Gary and Rick, what this represents, and there are hundreds, as Gary noted earlier, you know, there are hundreds of abandoned mines in Colorado. They've at least been trying to count them. We in Appalachia, in Virginia, Kentucky, and West Virginia in particular, we have no earthly idea how many abandoned mines there are. Okay? And all of these mines have water issues of one sort or another. And so I think we really have to understand, and maybe if I say this to a bunch of Californians, you'll go, oh, I get it. We have to understand that the waters of the United States, and that's a very specific phrase within the Clean Water Act, and there have been huge fights over what that phrase means. The waters of the United States belong to the people of the United States. And the waters of the United States are in far more danger than most anybody takes into consideration. Whenever Bernie, for instance, talks about our crumbling infrastructure, we've got to do something about the highways, blah, 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 our schools, yada, yada. Nobody says the crumbling infrastructure of our water. This is the commons. And you know what? I'm pissed off because I live in a place where before the mining industry came here, the waters ran so pure and so damn clear that people just, they drank out of the spring. My great-grandfather, there was a little declivity between two hills, and it was always shaded, and that's where his spring house was. And it didn't matter what time of year it was, the butter and the buttermilk and the milk and anything that needed to be kept cool was always cool because it sat in the spring. And you could drink from the spring. And the hillbillies had the common sense not to piss and shit in the spring, okay? But along comes the mining industry, and that's all they've done for 125, 150 years. And that's some of the most critically endangered infrastructure that we have in this country. And I say that because I'm looking at another story here. I'm sure most of us who have been in the grocery store have seen those Halo's mandarin oranges. Or maybe you've seen Sunview or Trinchero or Bee Sweet Citrus. Well, guess what? there's an article in Mother Jones Magazine. And this goes back a couple of years, but I mean, this has to be taken into consideration. Those things may be grown with carcinogen and watered, those citrus trees, with carcinogen-laden oil industry waste, fracking waste. Not kidding. Back in 2013, Water Defense tested some of the water. Treated oil wastewater being sold to California farmers contained acetone, oil, methylene chloride, and as high as 56 parts per billion, nearly four times the amount of methylene chloride that was in the contaminated river after the ExxonMobil tar sands pipeline burst in Mayflower, Arkansas. And that's what the orange groves are being watered with. And that's why I say we don't fully comprehend. I mean, and Gary said, yeah, this river's been polluted for years. And we know that there's not a single river in the United States that does not have some degree of mercury contamination in the aquatic life there. And there's warnings about pregnant women eating freshwater fish in the United States. And we just kind of go stumbling and bumbling along. You know, I don't know. Maybe some of those firefighters could bucket up a whole bunch of this mine waste and drop that on the forest fires in California. There's a good idea, huh?
Yeah, Bob, the pollution that I was referring to, you know, somewhat heavy metals, you know, a few, you know, larger spills, water containing heavy metals, you know, nothing like this one, but mostly Giardia and E. coli, you know, bacterial, you know what I mean? So it's not like you can't drink this stuff, but up there you could, you know, way up there on the mountain, you know, because this, you know, this, your whole east-west watershed starts right up on Red Mountain. You have the Animas watershed, which ends up going west and into the Colorado on the western part of the divide. And then on the eastern side, you have the Uncompahgre. There's a stream that comes right down off the very, very top of the mountain. And when I say a stream, it's like a trickle and nothing there at certain times of year. You know what I mean? And it hits the top of Red Mountain Pass, which is at over 11,000 feet. And it goes in two directions. It goes south toward along the highway toward Silverton, and then it also goes north toward Ouray, which eventually ends up in the what's called the Uncompahgre watershed, and that's what ends up in your Rio Grande watershed. You know, so this is all high country. You know, this stuff up there. You know what I mean?
Well, yeah, and when you talk about some times of the year there's no water in it, and other times there is.
Yeah.
Well, when I said a few minutes ago, Gary, that there are real fights over what does waters of the U.S. mean. Well, that's one of those things because for instance, back here in Appalachia, the coal industry has buried forever, gone, done, 2,000 over 2,000 miles of streams. Okay, and the coal industry says, well, them weren't really streams. Them were periodical water rivulets. Because during the rainy season, they're streams. And in the spring melt-off, they're damn near rivers, some of them. But in high summer, no, they can dry up to next to nothing. But they all support life, and they're all very real. And the coal industry pretends that, oh, dang, you mean that was a stream? Son of a gun. It didn't have any water in it when we covered it up. So, no, I understand what you're talking about. But I mean, we're talking here about the need for an essential change in the way we as human beings and we as Americans view things like our water resources. It's people have to come first. Because like I said the other night, all of these mines are full of all of this toxic waste because somewhere back in time, someone made a decision that somebody, that some millionaire's ability to make more millions were more important than human beings downstream right to have clean water flowing through, you know, for cattle, other livestock, watering crops, that kind of stuff. Oh, and by the way, thanks to Tim, he sent me the link. It turns out that Environmental Restoration LLC has been paid 381 million dollars in government contracts since October 2007. Nice work if you can get it.
How can I get into that racket, Bob?
Well, it's not necessarily a racket, Rick. Okay?
I'm being facetious, Gary.
Yeah,
I know.
Okay. All right. You know, there's being in the labors, you know, a lot of our guys work for environmental union contractors. You know what I mean? And they're, you know, fairly serious about going in and doing a proper cleanup of those particular sites that, you know, are designated to be cleaned up. So, you know, it doesn't surprise me on the amount. You know, if you're going back to 2007, you know, if it's a fairly large, legitimate environmental contractor doing cleanup, throughout the West, I would think. So, but I think there's something smells here, you know.
I worked on that EPA Superfund site out of Redding. It was a Recovery Act 2009. It was an old copper mine.
Yeah.
And they've been treating the waste at that mine for years now. There used to be a sludge dam that flowed off from the mine, and then when it the lake was just color. I mean, I remember riding my motorcycle around it in the 70s. It was just kind of a reddish, yucky color. Well, when I worked up there, what we did is with that sludge dam would fill up, and then there'd be a certain amount of this shit that'd leak out, and where it goes in the Sacramento River, it just settled right there, right above Keswick Dam. And so what they did is we built this project with three pumping stations, and they dredged the river to get that sludge out of Sacramento. We pumped it up, and they dug this giant hole, and they lined it and with everything, and they pumped that sludge into this giant hole, and then they covered it back up and walked away. But the mine site itself still has a water treatment plant. It'll be there forever.
I just sent I think five guys. I gave them their initial MSHA class to go work on a Chevron mine up in Cuesta, New Mexico, here just not too long ago. You know, it's the same thing. It's a metal mine, you know what I mean, with a lot of, and it was owned by Chevron. It's owned by Chevron these days, and they got to go up in there, and, you know, it was named a Superfund site or whatever, but, you know, at least they were, the mine is no longer in production, so they're actually cleaning it up. So, you know, there's shady folks and good folks out there, you know, trying to legitimately clean up some of these sites.
Yeah.
Just that there's no more money because the Republicans took the tax that used to go on the polluters, okay? Part of the original Superfund legislation.
Are you talking about AML, abandoned mine lands?
No. I'm talking about the original Superfund, and then the reauthorization. Well, somewhere in the 2000s, they decided to end that tax, which was basically, you know, the kitty for EPA to use, you know, to go out and get these contractors. So, you know, that's kind of dried up. So it's just what they get in their general, general authorization.
Yeah, their annual budgeting.
Right.
Well, according to the story that Tim sent me, of the $364 million that EPA paid to this company in Missouri, $37 million of it was given to environmental, what was the name, restoration for their Colorado work. $37 million. But I mean, there's all kinds of abandoned mine lands is another program besides Superfund. But I think it's noteworthy that the fact is this is all a matter of redistribution of wealth. This is, you know, we've talked about it before in regard to the banking crisis. This is socialism for the wealthy and brutal capitalism for the poor. Because what's happening is, you know, poor people didn't cause these things. Workaday Americans didn't cause these things. These God knows tens of thousands of mines full of poisonous toxic waste, the sludge dams in West Virginia, the coal ash dams virtually every coal-fired power plant in the United States, these are all generated as a result of capitalist profit-taking, okay? And so when they go sideways, the taxpayers wind up covering the tab. And it just seems that that's natural. And the essential dodgy nature of the mining industry is such that if you look to them and say, hey, what about, they go, oh, we're broke. At least the way we experience it here in Appalachia, that's why you'll have an Alpha Natural Resources who sets up We Love Jesus Coal as a subsidiary, and We Love Jesus Coal has another subsidiary called And America 2, and another subsidiary called And Apple Pie, and none of those subsidiaries ever have any money. They are designed to go bust. And they go bust in Siri so that you can never actually, if you've got a beef with them, you can never actually get to the money, and the mother corporation CEOs and executives laugh all the way to the bank. For instance, anytime a mountaintop removal site goes in, they have to post a bond, okay? And it's a big bond. And getting released from that bond, I mean, it's not like state government waits around and says, well, we're going to hold your bond here until we're sure that you haven't completely screwed an entire community or your sludge dam breaks loose or any of that stuff. It gets released, and the minute it's released, it's gone. And everybody's on the hook. And that's probably the case all over the entire country.
You gotta love corporations, Bob, you know?
Oh, sure.
I mean, what would we do without them?
I mean, they like I've said before, they have their purposes, but they need to be closely regulated. I mean, I do not want to fly an airline whose planes are built by some neighborhood hobbyist group that gets together on Saturdays over beers to build airplanes. Cell phones, you know, it's going to take a pretty big organization to provide, you know, national coverage. We understand these things, and they can actually be good for a culture if they are properly regulated and watched like a damned hawk. Because if you don't watch them like a hawk, they will behave, well, water will find its own level, and corporations will behave the way corporations behave if they're not watched. And that's why George Bush, with his whole self-regulating and self-reporting baloney and as reasons to get rid of regulatory agencies in the United States. Nobody ever, did anybody take that seriously? I think even the corporations were giggling.
Well, they called it the Clear Skies Initiative. You mean they were lying to us, Bob?
Yeah, and the Healthy Forests Initiative meant we were going to cut down more trees.
Yeah, right. Oh, my God. I mean, this whole idea of self-regulation, it's such a crock. I mean, has it helped us in the food industry? I don't think so. What about the pharmaceutical industry? What about the
And the thing is, it's an idea whose time came. And even Even the Obama administration, I remember the story from months ago, maybe a year ago, when it turned out that the pilot program for raw chicken inspection that was self-regulated and self-reporting and had been tried in multiple countries and was found to be an absolute dismal failure with poisonous chickens showing up every time they tested the damn things. Well, the Obama administration, I forget if it was the FDA or USDA or who, probably USDA. The Obama administration, USDA, looked at the program, which was a miserable failure, and said, this is great. We're going to expand it nationwide.
Hey, Bob.
Oh, I was just going to test if y'all can hear me. Anybody there?
Yes, Jack.
Okay. All right. Thank you. That's all.
How are things down in Louisiana, Stan?
It's okay. It's been up to like 104, I think, last weekend.
That sinkhole still sinking?
Yeah, I think as far as I know, yeah. And every day there's something in the paper about, you know, Jindal doing something that is bad.
What's his approval rating, Jack? Is he at like 20% or something like that?
It's pretty bad, yeah. I don't know.
Maybe by the time he leaves office, they'll name a cesspool after him or something.
Yeah.
Well,
a couple of news items I saw was there's something, I guess they're trying to, either it's already there or they're trying to make a bill for the Heritage Act. And they didn't say in the article what it exactly was, but Jindal was for keeping these Confederate monuments that whatever area council had said they were going to get rid of, you know, so it would prohibit that. So that's bigger government, you know. And then the other thing he did was he's going to put those GPS trackers and things that monitor your driving on every state vehicle, which is like over 10,000. And then it'll automatically tell somebody, like, if somebody's not driving perfectly, you know. So it's, you know, so, well, smaller government, you know. But I would find that that's really, would really get, I don't know, it would bring you to have a lot of stress, I think, you know, and you couldn't go to lunch somewhere or you couldn't go on an errand or whatever, you know. So that sucked. One other thing, which y'all may have talked about, but did you hear the, I don't know, I guess the false flag thing about
false flag.
The Animas River, that they were saying that the EPA did it on purpose so that they could get Superfund money. But I read before it was like some town or state council didn't want tourism to be affected, so they didn't want themselves labeled as a Superfund site. But, you know, it was just, that was like, I don't know, last night or two nights ago I heard that. It's just unbelievable.
Yeah, we were just talking about that, actually, how, you know, it's sort of like, you know, the skunk at the garden party. You know, you don't want to, you know, you want to keep the skunk away from the party and just pretend that there's no problem. I was kind of along the same lines. There's a place that should be a Superfund site. I think it is a Superfund site in West L.A. County, in the west part of San Fernando Valley, called the Santa Susana Mountains. And Rocketdyne used to have a big facility there. And there was actually an experimental nuclear reactor that melted down in like the 1958 or something like that, and again like in the mid-60s. And it just, you know, caused all sorts of contamination, and that's sort of the dirty little secret out, you know, in that part of the county, you know, realtors don't talk about it, and I mean, they have really high levels of radon. Now, that might or might be naturally occurring, but it might be a product of the decay of, you know, these radioactive isotopes that were released into the atmosphere. I mean, I don't really know, but, you know, it's, you know, nobody wants to have that designated as a toxic waste site, because nobody's going to want to go there. It's going to hurt the property values. Business is going to be affected. But, you know, I mean, you know, what people don't think about is the fact that, I mean, there's huge cancer clusters not too far from that, from that site, a place called Oak Park. It's a suburb out there in Ventura County.
France, there's plutonium about 30 centimeters under the soil all over the place from the 1957 meltdown. They're building a subdivision on top of plutonium contaminated areas of the old Rocky Flats site.
Oh, geez.
No kidding. It's true. And they're building a freeway through it that involves disturbing a whole bunch of what is considered in situ disposed radioactive contaminants. Well, they're boiling them up with their bulldozers to build a freeway between Arvada and Boulder right now.
Well, you know, I sometimes wonder if the cockroaches do deserve to inherit the Earth after all with what we've done to the planet, you know?
Well, you know what I've said, long said in that regard, Rick?
Yeah?
A couple of hundred million years from now, when the Earth is populated by a race of 7-foot-tall sentient cockroaches, they're going to they'll find our skeletons in the ground. And they'll put statues up to us as gods for making making the planet filthy enough for them to live.
And laying the groundwork for them becoming 7 feet tall.
Right, exactly, yes.
Yeah, you took a twist there right at the end.
Yeah, sort of like the mutants, you know, you hear these stories about, you know, fish near nuclear reactor, you know, reactors, how they're larger than normal, and, you know, they get mutated because they feed off of the, well, they grow bigger because of the heat and so forth. And all
you don't have to have a nuclear reactor nearby. We've got three-headed fish, three-eyed fish, twisted spine fish, double-headed fish. Just downstream from your average garden variety mountaintop removal operation, Rick.
Partially a test, but the Farallon Islands off San Francisco have had the same thing due to nuclear waste dumping.
Great, Scott. Excellent. It's Roger in Humboldt. We're so glad to hear you.
Thank you. It works. Damn, it's been an hour and a half waiting for this son of a bitch to figure out how to
Every now and then I'd look over because I thought my computer would move, Roger. And all I could figure was that it was actually feeling the kicks that you were delivering to yours out there.
Oh, man, it's been an hour and a half trying to get Skype to get up and running.
Excellent.
And first things first, you have a squash update.
Oh, well, I posted it because the texting thing was working, but I had no audio and, you know, nothing. I rigged up a little bit of a sling, and I went out into the patch, and they're weighing about between 17 and 18 pounds. And the last time I went online and researched, blah, 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 they were really crowing about an 18.5-pound squash. And these stems aren't even starting to die off, and the squashes are still growing. And I posted them, and it should be on your page or can link to it or whatever, because my Facebook page is kind of open. These things, the last time I measured, it was 18.5 inches long, 22 inches around, and that one I weighed today, and it's a sling, so you can't really tell, but it was like 18 pounds.
it may well be on the way to becoming the squash that ate Humboldt County.
No. You can make a zucchini to 25 in Humboldt County. No, this is not as big as some zucchinis I have seen and grown. Now it's a big squash. I'm not knocking that, but zucchinis are like baseball bats. Humboldt County is the only place in the world where nobody locks their car in the winter, but everybody locks their car in the summer because you don't want to come back after you've been parked on the plaza and find out somebody filled your car with zucchini. I mean, this is zucchini capital of the world.
Yeah, my zucchini's got ate up by some bugs.
On a zucchini here in Humboldt County on the coast goes absolutely nuts. I'm seriously, you can grow a zucchini the size of a baseball bat here on the coast.
Mm-hmm.
With no problem at all. I mean, you don't have to do anything special. You just grow it, you forgot to pick it, and 2 weeks later you go out and it's a baseball bat.
Well, I was surprised when mine were growing. You'd look at it, it'd be real small, and then you'd go out there the next day, and the thing would be a foot long.
Oh, yeah. But you're too hot over there right now. We're still cool over here. And all summer long, they just grow.
Mm-hmm.
They're amazing. But anyhow, the website, God, I can't remember the name of the squash, but the website was really crowing about they came up with an 18.5 pounder. And I'm sure that when this gets done, because they're a winter squash, I'm going to have 20, 25 pound squashes.
That's just so cool. I mean, I feel like I'm participating vicariously in some sort of science experiment / anthropology / well, food porn.
Well, I'll send you 100 seeds and you can pass them out to anybody you want.
Speaking of food porn, what about some recipes for the zucchini?
Oh my God, zucchini, you can do anything. You dice it up and make little teeny tiny cubes and make zucchini omelet. Saute it a little bit before you throw it in the eggs. Slice them off to where you get rounds and olive oil and garlic and saute it a little bit until they're hot and crisp. You can make zucchini relish. You can make zucchini pickles. I make zucchini chips, dried zucchini, and dried cucumbers, and sell them at the farmer's market. You know, you slice them a quarter inch thick, put them in the food dehydrator, sprinkle garlic salt on, and 24 hours later you dump them off and put it in a container, and then you bag them up and take them to market. You can dice them up and put them in salads. I mean, there's all kinds of things you can do with zucchini. And now, when they get bigger, my favorite recipe with a big zucchini is you cut it in half, scoop the seeds out, and put a meatloaf in it. And you bake the meatloaf in the half of zucchini. And when it's done, you turn it out, throw the zucchini away, eat the meatloaf, and it saves you from having to wash a meatloaf pan, which when you cook a meatloaf, it's a pain in the ass to cook the pan. So you cook it in a zucchini and then throw it away.
It probably gives the meat a really good flavor too, I imagine.
That recipe.
It sort of does, but I don't give a shit about the flavor.
That kind of reminds me of the recipe where you do like an eye of round roast in a salt crust, and then when you're done, you crack the salt crust away. I wonder with a big enough zucchini if you could do something like that with a nice hunk of beef or a pork loin or maybe a big salmon fillet.
I'm sure you could. Now, I have cooked prime rib in a Dutch oven packed with rock salt. And you crack the salt off, and the roast isn't salty. It's amazing how the salt doesn't get into the roast. But I've never tried to do that with a pork loin or a prime rib or anything else in a zucchini number. But it's not uncommon for here on the coast to have a 20, 25-pound zucchini.
Well, I bet you if you did meat in it, I bet you really could do it low and slow until it was just falling apart tender.
Oh, I'm sure.
Because, I mean, that thing will absorb some heat.
Yeah?
Can you make pasta with zucchini? You'd probably have to mix it with something, I imagine.
I've never tried.
You can make zucchini bread.
There you go.
Oh, yeah, zucchini bread is a common number that's done here.
Hmm.
And I've never tried to dry and powder zucchini, but I do know a friend of mine has a I don't know what her food diet is, vegan, vegetarian, whatever, but she makes a pizza crust out of dried cauliflower, dried broccoli, etc. And I provide her with the dried cauliflower, broccoli, etc. stuff, and she loves it and uses it in place of flour to make her pizza crust. I'm sure it could be done with zucchini.
Is it tasty? Have you had her crust?
No, I'm not that friendly with her.
Oh, okay.
She is a little too weird for me to even get close enough to have a slice of pizza.
I guess if she tasted it first, that would be okay, but otherwise...
Well, you know, she asked, do you have any dried da-da-da-da-da? And I went, well, yeah, we ran out of freezer space. I dried this stuff. Well, I'd like some. Okay, fine. Here's a 4-ounce jar, you know.
Mm.
And she said, oh, man, this is great. Keep making it. Well, now I'm going to charge her for it and not give it to her. But, no, she's... a young thing, I don't know, she's 25 or something like that, and I'm 70, and she's just getting driver's license, and she's not registered to vote, and when I try to talk to her about Bernie Sanders, she goes, oh, I don't do anything about politics. Hey, she's the bartender, I give her a tip, because she brings me a beer.
There you go.
And speaking of which, have a little bit, yeah, let's throw a little beer porn into the conversation too. I've touted frequently, and Ron up in not Oregon but Canada joined in the little restaurant over in Fayetteville that does such a wonderful job. Secret Sandwich Society. They really, really do work to keep some interesting beers on tap. And I know, if you're in San Francisco or some other part of civilization, being able to get good craft beers, probably no big deal, but they just announced that they had tapped a keg of Omegang Three Profits, and this stuff is amazing. It's a high-gravity affair, and it's a cross between their version of a Creek Lambique and a typical, like, quadruple Belgian ale. Holy mackerel. It's like 10% alcohol, and I tasted it. I mean, because they know I'm a beer snob. They're like, yeah, here, you want to taste this? And not even just a little mouth, just a little mouthwash and swallow. Oh my God, it was special. I'm quite anxious, really.
Hey, Bob.
Yes, Parky.
Did you watch that Helium Beer video I sent you?
I haven't had a chance yet. Because yesterday we were on the road all day, coming back from Charleston and everything. I'm still recovering from the fact that there's a hospital in Charleston with a cardiac prayer lab. Helium beer, though? Is that what that was?
Yeah. I think the guys were Belgian or Dutch or something. I don't know what language they were speaking. But they drink the beer, and then their voice would get real high when they start talking. It's funnier than shit. They couldn't stop from laughing either. It's one of them things, hysterical laughter.
But that was like a YouTube or something?
Yeah.
I wonder if it's just like a spoof.
It doesn't
seem like you could actually do it.
Yeah, how would you dissolve helium into beer? I mean, helium is such a light gas. You know?
I don't know, but I mean, you look at it, I mean, Sam Adams got a helium beer commercial on YouTube, too, I saw.
Yeah.
Because you're drinking the bubbles, you know, they're not, it's not going to, I mean, it's not like you can breathe it in.
Yeah.
Well, it affects your vocal cords. Even the bubbles, I guess.
Well, maybe so. I guess you'd have to have fairly high concentration helium for the bubbles to have that effect. But yeah, I guess it's theoretically possible.
Well, just go to YouTube and search helium beer.
Helium beer, okay. I guess it's not just for the munchkins anymore, right?
No.
That was quite a group of people. They were really wild folks.
I don't think there's any of them left now.
No, I think Billy Barty was one of the last ones. Actually, it was kind of interesting. His son or grandson, I think his son had inherited his house in Studio City when we were selling our house in La Crescenta. And actually, his son made an offer on our house and almost became the buyer, but it fell through. You know, somebody else ended up buying it. But that was kind of interesting, you know? So I had some contact with a Hollywood legend, albeit, you know, a generation removed, you know?
Oh, hey, back to the food porn just for a second. This in from Ron in Canada, in reference to baking stuff in zucchinis and baking stuff in salt, roasting stuff in salt. A recipe, because Ron is, of course, originally a hillbilly like me. Baked potato possum. Clean the possum, wrap the potatoes in spinach leaves, put them inside the possum cavity, bake at 350 degrees for an hour. Remove from oven, remove potatoes from the cavity of the possum, and throw away the possum. Ta-da!
I'm not so sure if that's food porn, actually. That's kind of food yuck, I would call that.
Oh, you ain't lived till you've had sweet potato possum.
Huh. That's just like my throwaway to zucchini.
Yeah.
Yeah, because see, all the zucchini talk was beginning to worry Brother Deacon Asa up in Vancouver. And he said, with all these guys talking about whose zucchini is bigger, the food porn segment of the program is turning into a sort of homoerotic porn segment. Watch it.
I did some stuffed patty pans a few years ago for my dad. My sister had me grow them. She planted them on her way to Alaska when she stopped here to see my dad. And then I was looking for a recipe, so I found this one for stuffed patty pans. I think I put cheese and meatloaf in, and I forget what all I put in. Because I never made them after that, because we never grew them again.
What are... I don't recognize the word.
It's a patty pan squash. It's a round squash. It goes, and then you cut the top off of it, and then you hollow out the insides out, and then you just stuff it. And bake it.
Probably be pretty tasty.
Patty pans are another summer squash like zucchini, yellow crookneck, patty pan. They come in yellow, they come in green, and the way we eat them is you just slice them up and do olive oil, garlic, saute them, heat them up until they're hot raw, and then serve them. but they're a summer squash like zucchini.
Yeah, I also did them on the barbecue, I think, sliced.
Oh, yeah, if you slice them and soak them in Italian dressing for an hour or two and then put them on the barbecue to Ooh. Where they get hot raw, they are fantastic. But they got to be fresh. I mean, you go to the store and buy them, they're already 4 or 5 days old, and somehow the flavor has disappeared by the time you cook them.
And, you know, Larry in the chat room just, or in the chat group just asked in chat, what does possum taste like? And you know, really the same thing applies, Roger. You got to have it fresh. 3 or 4 days dead, and it's not the same.
Well, we never had possums up here in Humboldt County until about 10 years ago, and now we see them alongside the highway all the time. But to me, they're just a giant rat, and I'm not thinking I want to eat them. And yet, I know the possums are vegetarians.
No, they're not. And, they're not very good. They're like groundhogs, they're very greasy and pretty skanky when you get right down to it. I figure I know why you've got them in Humboldt now. The Bumpuses came out to visit, and their pet got away.
No, they built a highway with all kinds of bridges and all the rest of them. They're traveling up the highway, and they're just migrating because of climate change.
Possums are all over out here. They hang out on the Sacramento River.
But I was there when I was growing up. We never had them, and now, God, every time you drive to town, you see a couple of dead possums alongside the freeway, mm-hmm. or in the middle of the road.
We either got possums or raccoons.
Possums really get a bad rap because they look ferocious, and they're not particularly appealing to look at. They're neat little animals. They really are. Oh, hey, breaking news. Well, it's breaking a while back, but since we were talking about regulation versus deregulation a few minutes ago, some deregulation is boiling up into the air in Conroe, Texas.
I tried to get that to you in the chat earlier.
It's the way the room looks. It's the way the studio's set up. If I'm not staring right at the chat computer, it just blows right by me. Shelter in place order for residents within a 2-mile radius of the drill chem plant. No injuries so far, mercifully. It's not like the China thing.
They make lubricants and stuff for the oil industry.
Yeah. And, of course, you can't have regulation in Texas because then little baby Jeeves wouldn't love them anymore. But, you know, this is going to keep on happening. A quick show of hands, metaphorically speaking. Does anybody think that the humongous explosion in Tianjin, China, may have been terrorism?
Didn't cross my mind. I was thinking while they were making everything as cheap as possible, and maybe some safety things were
right. And that's the nature of my inquiry, Jack. Was that terrorism, or was that capitalism? And either way, tell the difference?
I looked upon it the same way as what, Waco, Texas. I looked upon it as capitalism.
Yeah.
Howdy, Bob.
Howdy, Dad.
They could have had some spark. Their electrical system failed and it wasn't explosion-proof or something. Who knows?
Well, the only thing that made my pink little ears perk up was the fact that there was explosion number one, all the firefighters rushed to it, and then there was explosion number two, and a whole bunch of firefighters died.
Yeah, I was about to ask if anybody knew the layout. I mean, I can't even remember what was there.
Well, 9/11.
I mean, like, where was the first explosion and how far?
It was inside the chemical plant.
Oh, it was a warehouse, wasn't it?
Could be, but I thought it was an industrial chemical site.
Well, the story I read said they stored tremendous amounts of incredibly volatile chemicals. And again, hey, there's some of that deregulation that the Republican Party wants so badly.
The free market.
I wanted to go back to the whole shelter in place thing. I mean, that's very important. Obviously, you have to order people to shelter in place because you need all those sensors.
Yeah, those are meat bag sensors, are they not, Devin?
Yes. I mean, you have to have that so you can sample how far it went.
Oh, it just brought to mind, how bad our security is around, like, chemical plants and nuclear reactors and everything else. I mean, if terrorists hit them, it'd be a lot worse, really, in the long run, than a plane, than something that makes probably more press. We still don't search our pack or our crates at the shipping ports.
Well, an 80-something-year-old nurse got into Y-12, if that tells you anything. Yet I have to get a full cavity search if I want to get on an airplane.
What's Y-12?
That's the place where they did the Manhattan Project.
Oh,
the Calutrons.
Okay.
In Tennessee.
Well, that's right. Was it a nun? She went to jail for that, didn't she, Devin?
Yeah, federal prison.
Yeah. Yeah.
For 3 or 4 years.
Yeah, that was a long sentence. I think it was the swords to plow or the swords to plowshares movement or something like that with the Catholics.
Yes, it was plowshares.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, it's like there's just all these sites out there all over the place, because of capitalism, and any enterprising person who was sufficiently malevolent could, really wreak havoc if they did it. They don't have to go to an airport or a seaport. They can just, just go to some industrial site or a chemical plant or what have you, Pretty scary.
This is a slightly different direction, but when I'm thinking about, conspiracy stuff, well, people or companies want to, privatize water, and so we'll need, factories and stuff for that, and, purifiers and all that. Well, all these spills, oil spills, the BP spill, chemical spills, are just making the water worse and worse, and it's everywhere, it's every day. There's some spill, and at least if it's not on purpose, at least it's playing into the water privatizer's hands. It's just polluting everything. I don't know if y'all saw. There's 4,000 extra deaths somewhere in China. Because of pollution, I think that's a year.
Yeah, I mean, the skies there look like the skies did during the Industrial Revolution in the late 1800s, early 1900s, and around Pittsburgh, let's say, you know?
Because freedom.
There you go. That's right. The free market, Bob.
It's magic.
Yeah. Your reverb doesn't work on Skype, does it?
Apparently not.
Yeah. Yeah. That's okay.
Well, that reminds me of Denora.
Which is?
Well, there was a disaster in Denora, Pennsylvania. What was it? It was a zinc works, I think it was. And they had an atmospheric inversion that stayed there like a week. And it was absolute darkness for better than a week. All the exhaust from all those plants just filled the place in and killed a whole bunch of people. And that was one of the things that started spurring the the environmental protection movement.
When did that happen, Devin?
That was in the early 50s, I think.
Wow. They don't teach you about that stuff in school for some reason.
No, and nobody ever seems to explain that if you're going to have a free market, you're going to have a captive people.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Hey, one last little newslet item before we head out for the evening. And again, thanks to Tom out in the Bay Area for matching John's equipment fund contribution and his evening funding challenge. Thanks to that, we can start with a clean slate on Monday. Or, hey, if you're listening to this later between now and Monday, maybe you'd like to help us get started on Monday ahead of time. That'd be cool if we stayed a day or so ahead. But thanks to John and to Tom, we're at $1,000 now. To go on the equipment fund, and this by the way, I just wanted to mention this. I mean, because we've seen so much of this lately, and I'm anti-war, and I'm pro-peace, but dadgummit, it drives me crazy when I see these religious conservative maniacs destroying works of art. I mean, we've seen the Taliban blew up the giant ancient Buddha statues in Bamiyan.
Oh, yeah.
And ISIL have been going great guns, defacing and destroying giant winged Syrian Babylonian style sphinxes. And then there's this. Sculptures. Have been destroyed because the believers said that they were dirty and harsh and a mockery, and that the museum exhibiting them would be closed for offending believers. Yeah, that's right. That's right. It's Christians. It's not ISIL. It's not ISIS. It's not the Taliban. It's Christians in Moscow, Russia. Good, upstanding, God-fearing, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, Orthodox Christians who smashed up an exhibit of a dissident, nonconformist sculptor from the Soviet era named Vadim Sidur. And some of his sculptures had a Christian theme. And it was called Sculptures That We Don't See. And they were sculptures that were suppressed under the Soviet regime. And so, Orthodox activist Dmitry Sorionov, also known as Dmitry Enteo, went into the Manej Exhibition Center and began smashing sculptures because he said they were dirty and blasphemous.
Because the Christians are going to be forced, or would be forced, to go in the museum and look at them, right?
Right. Right.
Yeah.
He tweeted or social mediaed somehow that, they will close exhibition for offending believers.
Oh, my God.
Because the believers were offended by the exhibition even being there. They didn't have to see it.
Well, this, you know, I've tried to stay off.
Hi, Larry.
This stuff never ends. No matter in any kind of, I was talking with someone from Iran the other day, on Wednesday evening. He said, any place where there is fundamentalism, they all are closed-minded. I don't know what happens to the brains of these people, but anywhere where there is fundamentalism, you have this closed mind phenomenon, and they just get rigid.
Well, this guy Larry belongs to a nationalist group called God's Will, and he said, that the sculptures are dirty, harsh mockery of Jesus Christ and saints.
Oh, he did.
Yeah.
Are we going through?
And he has also participated in an attack on a gay pride parade in Moscow.
Oh, my God. Are we going through another Dark Ages, Bob?
No, we're just headed toward it. We haven't gotten there yet.
Can I add another future right-wing brain explosion event that happened today?
Oh, do please.
The Pentagon is looking at Fort Leavenworth or the Navy brig in South Carolina to relocate the prisoners from Guantanamo Bay.
Yeah, they'll probably have to go all. They won't be able to find him under the fainting couch. They'll have to go all the way to the cellar to find Lindsey Graham there down there.
Oh yeah,
he'll be in the sub cellar down there at Smoldering Chode.
I saw the articles on CNN today.
Oh, and by the way, before we wrap up, special stupid kudos for the governor of Arkansas. I'm sure Haley is just, it's another proud moment for Haley in dealing with his beloved home state. The governor of Arkansas has apparently defunded Planned Parenthood. Because, you know, breast cancer, ovarian cancer, the various diseases of the reproductive and mammary systems in women, Jesus loves those so much. Jesus wants all the poor women in Arkansas to get them some good upstanding, God-fearing, Bible-believing, Christ-centered cancer. And maybe some breast cancer, some ovarian cancers, uterine cancer, because of God's all powerful love for humanity. And the governor of Arkansas made sure to help out with the wonder working powerful work of Christ Jesus today in Arkansas.
Praise God and pass the ammo, Bob.
Well, if you haven't see it, give a video suggestion, go to Funny or Die and check out their Planned Parenthood video.
Oh, yeah? Good one?
Yeah.
Well, also in today's paper, Louisiana and Alabama may be violating federal law by ending state Medicaid, federal health, wait, no, I'm sorry, state Medicaid payments to Planned Parenthood. Now, I don't know if the Hyde Amendment, like, override, like, does it count for the states, too, or I don't know, but you know, I would think that Louisiana would probably have its own, like, Hyde Amendment, which, you know, where state money wouldn't go to, you know, abortions or something. But apparently they're just cutting off the payments, whether it's legal or not.
Right, because God. No, it is illegal. It's a form of discrimination. If you can count on the rats on the Supreme Court to actually hold up the right, uphold the rights of women to not be discriminated against, and therein, of course, lies the rub. And by the way, one last thing: it was nice to see, and Isaac pointed this out to me. It was nice to see that the Black Lives Matter activist decided to finally go after somebody besides Bernie. They disrupted Jebya a couple of days ago.
Yeah.
And of course
in Nevada.
Yeah. And of course
now, did they get on stage or just heckle?
No, they couldn't get anywhere near the stage. Okay. Jebya's got paid security. And they may be activists, but I mean, come on. They don't want to get tased or gassed or pepper sprayed or beaten up, right, or, you know, killed, because that's the essential nature of the complaint and the activism. And I'm not trying to be a smartass. I wouldn't do it either. So it remains to be seen if since T-Rump has thrown the gauntlet down and says he'll punch them, he'll beat them all up, damn it. And by the way, there's I read a news article earlier today that said that T-Rump has the vocabulary of a fourth grader.
I
thought that was an optimistic estimate myself.
Let's not insult fourth graders there, you know? Right. That's not fair to the fourth graders.
And if you scroll and scroll and scroll and scroll down my Facebook page, you'll see the funniest graphic I've seen in a long time. I think Tony put it on there, if I recall correctly. It just says Trump, and it's all done up with red, white, and blue striping in the sort of the profile of his head, and it said, Trump, there will be hell to pay, T-O-U-P-E-E. I couldn't quit laughing when I saw it, but it was a very visual thing, so it's, if nobody's out there guffawing, I understand why, but it's the best one I've seen this early on. Yeah, and see, that's what I'm saying. I wouldn't rush the stage at a Jebya or a Trump or a Hillary event. As iPie in the chat room says, remember, Ray McGovern got beaten up for turning his back on Hillary. Which is all very true. Hey, we got to get out of here. Hope everybody has a wonderful weekend and a wonderful remainder of your evening or morning or afternoon, wherever it is that you are listening on this little blue-green marble time machine hurtling through space. Thanks to all of our participants in the Horn Malloy Skype chat group, the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable. Thank you, Sparky, for moderating. Thank you for joining in, Rick and Gary, Laborman. Thank you for being with us, Larry. And Tim San, thanks for the news articles. Thank you, Roger, for the squash update. And thank you, Jack. And thank you, Devin. And thank you, Roger in Minnesota, for your participation as well. And, of course, thanks go out always to, and what an amazing week, amazing couple of weeks it's been as we work on this equipment fundraiser. Thank you one and all for that. It is, it's humbling and it's inspiring. And I hope maybe by the end of August we'll have the stuff installed and be testing it and see where we go from there. Thank you for joining in and sharing your precious finite time in this conversation. It means, it makes all the difference in the world. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and ACACT, ACHEACT.org. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Have a great weekend, everybody. Good night.